AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction. And by propane. Propane is the energy for everyone, especially farmers. Environmentally friendly propane can fuel most anything on the farm. See how at propane.com. Big day today. We are getting a supply chain update. We will get perspective on today's and tomorrow's congressional hearings on the cattle market, focused on price discovery and transparency. And do biofuels have a role in President Biden's climate change plans? We'll find out.
Live from the frozen news section via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning, we begin with a conversation with Ken Erickson from IHS Market. Then it's Brett Crosby from the U.S. Cattlemen's Association, and later EPA Administrator Michael Regan. Right after the news, Karen Bonert from Farm Journal's Milk. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, and now the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
All right, Davis, thank you so much. Yes, you know what? Let's just go spoiler alert right out
spoiler
the gate.
Spoiler alert. Boop, boop, boop,
spoiler yep. gate right out the gate. Had a conversation with EPA Administrator Michael Regan this morning. We've got that for you at the end of the show. And answering the question, do biofuels have a role in President Biden's climate change plans? He says they do.
So and I wasn't in on this. Nobody told me. But I've imagined this is the sort of thing where you just sort of loft some softballs across the plate for him a little bit, you know, type of deal. Is that how you approached it?
Well,
this is a good get.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. This was a hats off to Joe Stackler.
Good work, Big Apple.
Big Apple Joe.
Yeah.
Producer on helping us.
He worked finally, so darn hard. Yeah.
Finally getting Administrator Regan. We'd been after him for a while, and Joe didn't let up, and we've got the conversation with him. So we are talking WOTUS. We are talking RFS issues, several issues, including what does it look like 2022 beyond for the RFS? Who is working with him now to define what that is going to look like beyond 2022?
Wow.
So we covered as much ground in the time that we were allowed as we could. So I'm looking forward to playing that for you at the end of the show.
Good work.
Before we get there, we talked about it yesterday a little bit. The ships are starting to back up on the coasts of the U.S. again. Is it because of some delays in China? I don't know exactly what's going on there, but I'll bet Ken Erickson from IHS Market and now S&P Global Platts.
Oh, man.
There's been a joining of forces there. We'll find out from Ken exactly what's going on the supply chain. And then, of course, the cattle industry hearings that are happening in the Senate today, in the House tomorrow. We've got some great perspective on what to look for and what the U.S. Cattlemen's Association wants to know from the packers.
Wow.
I'm going to get right to it, Brett, in that. And we'll get some analysis to the reports that were issued a couple of weeks ago on the bill that's being considered today. All right.
Wow. Busy morning.
Davis, yeah. We got a lot of ground. Let's go.
Well, I've got some highlights from USDA's crop progress and condition update for the weekend at April 24. Corn, 7% planted, compares to the 15% for the five-year average. 2% emerged, compares to 3% on average. Soybeans, 3% planted, compares to 5% on average. Spring wheat, 13% planted, compares to 15% on average. 2% emerged. Winter wheat, 11% headed, compares to 19% on average. 27% of the winter wheat crop rated good to excellent. That compares to 30% last week. And cotton, actually ahead of the game, 12% planted, compares to 11% on the five-year average.
Yeah, downtick in the condition of the winter wheat crop. That was off 3 points from last week.
Mm-hmm.
2 points up in the percent rated poor to very poor, which is now at like, geez, is it 39%? I think it is. It's tough condition.
And climbing. Well, about 40% of U.S. small businesses intend to raise selling prices by 10% or more amid decades high inflation. That's according to a survey from the National Federation of Independent Business. The report suggests that many businesses are planning increases that are above the current rate of national inflation. Yeah. The consumer price index rose 8.5% in March, the most since 1981.
Yeah, double-digit inflation rates. Here they come.
Russia renewed its attacks on Ukraine's infrastructure, striking at least five railroad stations in the West with missiles. The country's railroad director said there had been casualties but released no details. Meanwhile, the Russian foreign minister warned that there is a, quote, serious danger of nuclear conflict. Chip, that's just 1 week after he said Moscow was committed to avoiding the use of nukes. Lavrov said on state television that he regards NATO as engaging in a proxy war by providing weapons to Ukraine.
Yeah, whipsawing comments are part of the strategy in a situation like this. You make one comment and contradict it in the next line just simply to keep everybody off balance.
Well, the conflict over a management strategy known as precision scheduling is expected to come to a head today in the first of a two-day hearing of the Surface Transportation Board, where shippers and rail employees will lay out their grievances. Testimony could help persuade regulators to streamline rate disputes and allow shippers to compel a railroad to switch freight to a competing rail when feasible, which is an issue the board has taken up this year. Railroad execs say the pandemic is to blame for derailing service.
Yeah, we'll talk with Ken Erickson about that coming up here in just a little bit.
A consent decree approved by the U.S. District Court for the District of Columbia has EPA committing to June 3 as the deadline to finalize its 21-22 renewable fuel standard levels. The action would also include the 2020 RFS levels, as EPA has taken the action to address compliance years 2020, 21, and 22 in one rulemaking. Chip.
Yes, we ask Administrator Regan about that very specific topic.
Excellent.
Yes. All right, Davis, thank you so much. Appreciate it. Let's bring in Karen Bonert, editor of Farm Journal's Milk. Good morning, Karen.
Hi, Chip.
Hey, it's good to talk with you. So Texas is moving up the list of dairy-producing states. Tell us about it.
Yeah, it's kind of a big thing, to be honest. The Lone Star State climbed 6.7%, which helped them push past Idaho to rank number three in for milk production. Of course, Chip, this didn't happen overnight. From 2001 to 2020, Texas milk production has grown an impressive 190%. So what's the main driver? And that's the expansion of milk processing capacity and new plant construction in the Panhandle. What I know is a privately owned maker of Mexican-style cheese is scheduled to begin operation of a processing facility in Amarillo this fall, just 50 miles north, and Dumas, another plant, is also under construction. And then a Leprino mozzarella cheese and dairy ingredients plant is scheduled to break ground in Lubbock this summer. Of course, as you know, that in the northeast of the Panhandle, Hillmar Cheese is building a cheese and whey protein plant in Dodge City, Kansas. So some of that milk in the Texas Panhandle will be diverted towards that plant. What's crazy is that, Chip, California, Wisconsin, Texas, Idaho, New York, and Michigan, those six states account for more than 60% of the national milk production.
Wow.
Which is crazy, right? And so number two, Wisconsin produces nearly double that of Texas. So it's really unlikely that Texas will produce more than either Wisconsin or California to rank any higher. As we know, that Panhandle is a semi-desert. They get 12 to 18 inches of precipitation a year and are in a severe drought. So right now, what will be key is for them to invest into irrigation technologies, drought-tolerant crops, and more to feed all those cattle, right?
Right. Right.
And other states, other states that are trending from the USDA milk production report is South Dakota's up 20% year over year. And while New Mexico is down 9.3% with 37,000 fewer cattle.
Karen, we've got to go learn more about it. DairyHerd.com.
AgriTalk is brought to you by new Bond Silage Speed C, aerobically stable corn silage in 14 days. Learn more at BondSilageUSA.com/speed. It's fast.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
What if your commercial beef herd could be better than you thought possible? Genetic testing can help give you more confidence about what your herd is made of, and more importantly, what it can be. Inherit Select from Zoetis provides data-driven genetic insights to help you make more informed selection, breeding, and culling decisions about your cows and heifers. The journey from genetic potential to reality begins with Inherit Select. Ask a genetics rep how to save on testing with our whole herd promotion. Go to beefgenetics.com/radio.
AgriTalk is brought to you by Clarifly Larvicide, your feed-through fly control solution.
Well, I wish I had some shoes on my two bare feet. Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Glad that you are with us this morning. We have been keeping tabs of what's going on with the supply chain, and we talked yesterday with Darren Kopic from Ag Retailers Association about the decision from Union Pacific to limit some access there. It's part of, I believe, it's part of the precision scheduling that is part of a hearing today. We need to get an update from one of the guys that follows it closer than anybody I know, Ken Erickson, infrastructure guru, transportation expert at IHS Market, which has now joined forces with S&P Global Platts. Ken, welcome back to AgriTalk.
Hey, thanks for having me back. Good morning to you all. Good to be with you, Chip.
You bet. Glad that you are here. Glad you're here. Real quick, just tell us a little bit about the IHS Market S&P Global Platts connection.
Yeah, this has been exciting. About 2 years ago, a year and a half ago, was announced that IHS Market and S&P Global were going to merge, and that became official on March 1 of this year. It's been exciting for us to come into a great group of people. We're joining some of their ag team, and they with us across and all the indices and other areas. And there's a great big playground for us to work with our customers and our clients and just continue to get better and provide better services and really look to the markets here. And these markets, it's very timely with what's going on with pandemics, with war, with now challenges on the supply chain. It's been great for us to be able to have a number of resources to really hone our skills even more so and to bring better service to our clients.
Yeah. Yeah, excellent, excellent. Yeah, a couple of regulars, or at least semi-regulars on AgriTalk. Roger Bernard, I worked with Roger for 20 years at Pro Farmer. He's with the combined company. And Pete Meyer, S&P Global Platts, who has been out on crop tour with us for 20-plus years. He's a master scout. So it's a unique team that has been assembled there. Yeah.
It is. And Roger and I have been working together for many, many years. And then now with Pete, what a great combination. It's really a good powerhouse. And, down to earth, talking to the farmers, talking to the people in the supply chain, from Wall Street to Main Street, back to the fields. We have these conversations. It's real exciting.
Good, good, good. Okay. What's the status? Before we talk about the hearing that's happening today at the Surface Transportation Board, what's the status of the supply chain out there? Where are the kinks or the bottlenecks in the system right now?
Where do we start? Where are you at in the supply chain? And for farmers in particular, the lead in with what's going on with Union Pacific and the fertilizer and their metrics. I know we'll get to that here in a moment, but the rail has now become kind of the bullseye of, especially for ag. The barge market, they're recovering from a winter where they're now fully open up the river to Minneapolis-St. Paul and stuff is moving, but they've got their own challenges in different areas, but they're making it work. But and then the trucking side with the cost of fuel, and then on the ocean side with containers in particular, China still can't seem to figure out this pandemic and they're shutting things down. And that's just going to lead to greater issues down the road here. At the heart of all of this, though, is the labor challenges and issues. And we hear that over and over and over again. And that just means that if you can't get enough drivers or people to be in locomotives or to be on barges or to be on ships, and then in the warehouses and on the docks, it just exasperates this problem. And labor is an ongoing challenge and issue, and you kind of get tired of talking about it, but that we have to stay focused there and really think differently. How are we going to manage our supply chains and the needs to get inputs and then be able to take care of the crops? But then eventually we're going to be wanting to harvest. It's a little early, put the cart before the horse, but there's a lot of challenges out there, Chip.
Right. So on the label side of things, Ken, is that a U.S. issue or is it a global problem?
That's a global issue. Yeah. And we're seeing it just that people are being extended beyond a lot of work hours. China, I've been saying they're detaining their labor at factories, but they're keeping them at factories just to keep them running at 60%. And they're not letting them go home because they fear that they're going to go get COVID. If you keep them on site, you can protect them from COVID. We've discovered that if you take the shots and you mask up, you've done all that, you can do well. And we're getting through this. I don't know why it's such a mystery to some parts of the world. In Europe, we're seeing that too with their own truck drivers or in their manufacturing bases. And of course, with the war that's going on, the distribution of people, the refugees that we're seeing around different areas, it's just troubling. And now you're seeing the economy in the United States facing headwinds with inflation. But the consumer says, I want to get out. I've been pulled up. Yeah. I don't care. I'm going to spend it. This may be my last hurrah before fall, but we're going to go. And that just exasperates where we've got shortages at hotels, restaurants, and everywhere else. And you know, I hopefully that people will be patient, but these labor challenges are front throughout the whole supply chain, even to our retail customers.
Okay. All right. What they are doing in China right now, putting those fences up around apartment buildings to make sure that people can't leave or get in. It's surreal. It just seems like that is something that can't be happening, but it is.
It is.
The labor issues that creates.
It does. And you think about the transparency of China. Why is it that we've been doing it for a long time and USDA does it now? And global corn ending stocks, as an example, they show the world total ending stocks and they show the world without China. Why is that? They don't trust the data. And that's a problem. And we are going to face this as a long-term issue for us. And until we start seeing reshoring or moving production of the valuable electronics or resources we need to get back for our systems, whether it's for tractors or for equipment or for computers or for communications, we're going to have to endure this for a much longer than we really should.
Right. Let's go to the Surface Transportation Board. It's a 2-day hearing that is happening. They're going to be talking about precision scheduling. The haulers are going to have an opportunity to give their side of the story and what is causing all this disruption. What do you expect from the STB hearings?
Well, I was just listening to it before I came on the call here, and I got there just in time to hear some of our friends from the ag industry, National Grain and Feed, Growth Energy, Cargill, American Chemicals Association, the Fertilizer Institute, and I missed the first part of their prepared remarks, but there's some challenges they're facing out there. And at the end, the chairman of the Surface Transportation Board asked, well, what is an immediate solution we can do to get things going again? And I'm thinking, and they were really been focusing on metrics and the railroads reporting on what they're doing and being what their schedules look like and forecasting. And I'm thinking, you know, why are we talking about this today? We've talked about this many other times. We should be moving forward here in a lot of different ways. Remember, trains cannot levitate. They move on tracks, and you just can't move them. And we got weather in the Dakotas. And thankfully, I don't think it was 30 inches. Maybe it was 18 to 20 inches. But the Western Railroad carriers going through there, they're going to get stopped. And it doesn't take 24 hours to clear that out like an airline. It takes days, if not weeks, maybe months to uncover all of that. In a period where we got challenges there, they've got their own labor issues and trying to hire, and they're trying to pay bonuses. Well, by the way, coal is now an important commodity because of what's going on. And those coal cars are buried. Those locomotives are not prepared to go out there. They got to train people to move. It is a whipsaw activity for the railroad. So, you know, the railroads have, they've got challenges to try to get up to speed. They also got their challenges to try to communicate. And those in this day and age, why is communication a problem? And it still is one of the chief things that we have is keep us up to date with what's going on. And that's the thing I'm hearing over and over again, as well as just right. trying to get things up to speed again. Things have really slowed down out there.
Okay. So fixing the issues that exist out there, is it something that the federal government can they contribute to a fix?
Well, and that's going to be the challenge. If they got some great ideas, there is one member of the Surface Transportation Board asking about if they feel like they're being intimidated by the railroads if they come and speak out, and really is trying to push the people speaking about that. And the industry says, look, we're trying to do our best. On one hand, federal government, don't get in here, make a greater mess. But the problem is you're going to come in here and start talking, but the solutions are going to be for months, if not years down the road. We need to do something today. We should be proactive here. And, you know, the issues around reciprocal switching could be very challenging and daunting. The railroads are going to argue that vehemently to open up their railroad networks. The idea, though, is maybe there's regions that we can open things up and push for this to help bring relief. If you've got some track issues, bring it. And the railroads will argue that we do work with one another. We have command centers. We try to work together. In Chicago, they've got something like that. But end of the day, when you just can't get stuff moving and you've got labor issues yeah. and you've got number of ships showing up and your things are just clogged up, how do you get more relief? Maybe there's some ways to relax the permitting processes, Chip, to try to help these railroads open right. up more areas or right. for shippers to do the same thing.
Okay, Ken, we're out of time. We've got to get back together and continue the conversation as soon as we can. Thank you, Ken.
What if your commercial beef herd could be better than you thought possible? Genetic testing can help give you more confidence about what your herd is made of, and more importantly, what it can be. Inherit Select from Zoetis provides data-driven genetic insights to help you make more informed selection, breeding, and culling decisions about your cows and heifers. The journey from genetic potential to reality begins with Inherit Select. Ask a genetics rep how to save on testing with our whole herd promotion. Go to beefgenetics.com/radio.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
Joining us now, Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady. Beege, we've backed off the highs, but we've got some strength in the corn market. We've got a little bit of buying going on in the wheat market. What's behind it?
Yeah, you know, corn, I'll start there. It was a pretty impressive performance yesterday with everything that was going on with the pressure in the soy complex and outside markets and everything, and closed firmer, and we're seeing follow-through buying today. December futures or new crop futures is leading us up, and that's tied to the slow plantings, really slow out there and slow going, and probably going to remain that way at least for another week or so. So that's given support to the corn market. On the soy complex side of things, we had more daily soybean sales this morning to both China and unknown. And so that's given the front end of that market some support, along with the new crop futures and trading pretty solidly higher here at mid-morning.
All right. Very good. And soybean oil is trading back to the upside. We've got crude oil more than $2 a barrel higher today. That's probably helping out in that soy complex as well. Take us over to livestock trade. It was a tough start to the week for those markets.
Yeah, live cattle trying to bounce back a little bit. Just mild buying here at mid-morning, and so not getting a whole lot of upside momentum generated because of the strength in the corn market. Feeder cattle are slightly favoring the downside, though. The strength in the live cattle market is limiting seller interest somewhat there. And then on the hog side of things, boy, a poor performance yesterday from a technical standpoint, and it's getting even worse today. More support levels have been violated and sharp losses through the summer month contracts so far this morning.
All right, very good. Thank you, Brian. That is Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady on Markets Now.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. In the morning, you're coffeeed up and you're thinking. In the afternoon, you've calmed down, but you're still thinking. We're here all day. AgriTalk.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. Glad that you are with us today. Good update from Ken Erickson at IHS Market S&P Global Platts. We need to keep tabs of what is going on with efforts to help loosen up some of the kinks in the supply chain, fix some of the broken parts, and keep things moving out there. The other thing that we're keeping a close eye on today, Senate Ag Committee hearing on the Cattle Price Discovery and Transparency Act of 2022. It's a big day for the bill. Last we talked with Senator Grassley, he said that it was basically a formality and that it is going to proceed out of the committee. Let's get some reaction to that idea from Brett Crosby, U.S. Cattlemen's Association. Brett, welcome back to AgriTalk, buddy. How are you?
I'm doing well, Chip. How are you?
Doing real fine. I'm glad that you're here. Let's get your reaction to a couple of things before we talk specifically about the hearing. And those are the reports that came out a couple of weeks ago. The first one, it was a working group of ag economists that put together a study of the updates to the Cattle Price Discovery Transparency Act. And Brett, basically what they said is that the legislation is trying to fix a problem that doesn't exist. What's U.S. Cattlemen's reaction to that?
Well, it doesn't exist where? In other words, Chip, we know that the problem exists in Texas and Oklahoma, the Texas, Oklahoma, New Mexico region. We know there is not enough cash traded in that region to give us a good estimate of price discovery, which is why a lot of those formulas are based on the five market average instead of the Texas, Oklahoma, New Mexico cash average. So there is a problem in some regions. And we know that the formula trade provides incentives for people for feedlots to use them. That's why they have become so popular. And there's nothing wrong with that, but we need to make sure that formula trade doesn't become such a large proportion of the trade that we no longer have any transactions to use to establish a base price.
Gotcha. You know, your comments there fit closely with the report that was delivered by Texas A&M University that basically says it puts a lot of burden on the southern cattle producer or cattle finisher to participate more in the cash market. The northern market is filling the requirements already, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So they're going to have to step up and step up big time in negotiated cash trade if this bill goes through. That's the bottom line.
It is. And to that point, let's be clear. The reason that they are able to have such a large formula trade is because they receive free information from an existing government regulation that mandates prices be reported. So they are in essence being subsidized by the Livestock Market Reporting Act and using that free information so they don't have to negotiate trade themselves. And so we could call it a subsidy if we want. Regardless, they're using something. They're using an existing regulation to add value to their product, and so what's important also is that you know the NCBA has tried a voluntary approach to ensure what they call robust cash. And right. and it has failed at times, especially in the Texas, Oklahoma, New Mexico region. And I will say that from my discussions with people in the industry down there, it hasn't failed because feedlots haven't put enough cattle on the show list to meet that requirement. It has failed because there has been one particular packer that refused to enter the cash market until late last fall. And then another packer was in and out, but had all four been required to actually bid in the cash market, the voluntary thing would have worked.
Yeah. Yeah. I hear you. One of the concerns that I've got in all this, Brett, and tell me if it's a concern that I shouldn't have it. We got to discuss the quality issue of these cattle. It's higher quality market in the north than some of the big mega feedlots that we've got down in the southern market, that Texas, Oklahoma, New Mexico market that you're talking about. If we've got a higher negotiated cash price on those cattle, couldn't it pull the entire market down if they're buying on quality?
Look, Chip, we're talking about going from three or 5% in Texas to 12 to 15%. We don't really know what the numbers are, but that's where the voluntary numbers are. Yep. And I would expect that we would use that the USDA would use the same methodology.
Similar.
And so maybe not, but let's talk about quality for a second. Okay. You know, what's quality? Packers may be willing to accept a yield grade 1-2 that only grades 50% choice if they have 100% of them grading choice up north. So you know, they have learned there are different quality components.
Yep, mix and match.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep. Okay. I don't want to run out of time on this. Brett, we've got the hearing tomorrow with the beef packers at the House Ag Committee. What are the questions that you want to hear asked?
You know, I would like to understand why people are so opposed to putting a limit on the extent that MPR can be used to add value to their cattle. In other words, this isn't
I haven't heard it asked that way before, Brett. That's good. I haven't heard it asked that way before. That's really good, Brett. Keep going.
I don't see this as a new regulation. I really don't. I see this as putting boundaries on the extent to which an existing regulation can be used to price cattle so that we don't cannibalize the negotiated market. The other question I'd like to see asked is, why are they so opposed to this? Why are people so opposed to this if it allows for negotiated grid? Because the only difference between negotiated grid and a formula trade is, in a formula trade, you are using a price that someone else negotiated. With negotiated grid, you're using a base price that you agree on between your operation and the packer. All of the other grid components and quality premiums are still there. So if negotiated grid is included as a spot transaction or what I'd call a discoverable transaction,
right?
You still have all the benefits of the formula. You just it just allows the feedlot to actually say no, and that's a pretty big deal to me. You know, I don't like to have to put cattle on the show list on a formula and just know that I'm going to get whatever price the Nebraska market brings or whatever state. Right. I would love to be able to negotiate my base price and then be able to say no before I commit them.
Right. Right. The thing that, and I've mentioned this on the show before, Brett, this started as a, what the heck are the Packers doing with the Holcomb fire is how this whole process got started. And then the big Packer margins while the feed yards were losing money. And it was the focus was on Packers for so long. And it feels like it's become a North versus South cattle feeder issue now. And I don't like that. I don't like the fracture that's taken place in the industry. I'm glad to see that the Packers are back and the focus of a conversation in that house meeting. That's one of the benefits of all this, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. You know, this is not a – I'm not accusing any of the Packers of breaking any laws. You know, Packers acted as – rational players in the market when they had access to all this data, and they said, oh, this is a good way to price cattle. And so we're not, I want to make it clear that I'm not accusing them of doing anything wrong, but because they have such a large market share, they have such a large market share, we have to ensure that they can't do anything wrong and gotcha. That they are watched over.
Brett, thank you. Great, great job, Brett. Thank you so much for making time, man. Brett Crosby, U.S. Cattlemen's Association.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farmincentive to see if you're eligible.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
You're listening to AgriTalk, where the conversation begins. Join us at 855-4-TALK-AG.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. Joining me now is EPA Administrator Michael Regan. Administrator Regan, welcome to AgriTalk.
Well, thank you for having me. Excited to have the conversation.
Excellent. We talked recently with Mitch Landrieu. He is certainly excited and fired up about the building a Better America Rural Infrastructure Tour and the funding for several projects across the country, including the one that you and USDA Secretary Tom Vilsack are highlighting today, Franklin County, North Carolina. $39 million for six watershed projects in North Carolina is a really nice investment. What are the goals?
Well, I can tell you that $39 million for those watershed projects is a huge investment. And just for 2022 alone, let's add another $200 million for the state of North Carolina as well. We're seeing unprecedented investments in our rural water infrastructure, our rural watersheds, because the president had a vision to build a better America. And through these infrastructure investments, we are not leaving our rural communities behind. And so Secretary Vilsack and I have enjoyed such a great partnership. We've enjoyed traveling the country together. And in North Carolina, we are highlighting a great wastewater project in rural eastern North Carolina where those investments are being put to good use.
Outstanding. Yeah, it's there's plenty of investments coming their way. They are maintenance issues that are long overdue, Administrator Regan, and we're glad to see that they're happening, including on the inland waterways with the locks and dams.
Absolutely. You know, we've not had our rural communities at the table in the past. And this president wants rural America to understand, we understand this country is as great as it is because of rural America. And these investments will only help bolster the economic vitality of our rural communities.
Outstanding. Outstanding. As long as we're talking about water, what is the status of the Waters of the U.S. final rule?
You know, we proposed a rule largely drawn from the pre-2015 definition of WOTUS. We're updating it to reflect past Supreme Court decisions, and we're currently reviewing those comments. But I want to be clear that we want to be pragmatic. We want a durable role, and we want to keep the common sense pieces like prior converted crop exclusions, normal ranching and farming exemptions. We want to have a durable rule that will not give this country whiplash like we've seen over the past few years. And so that's right. Our goal with this proposed rule.
Yeah, certainty is what rural America is looking for on this. The updates, are those updates leaning to the Obama era or to the Trump era rules?
You know, we're going back pre-2015 that precede both President Obama and President Trump. So this rule will go back prior to President Obama, pre-2015. We're going to try to codify some decisions that the Supreme Court has already made just so that we can provide that certainty. And again, we want to hold on to those practical exemptions and exclusions that we know our rural and farming community needs.
Excellent. Excellent. Okay, EPA has proposed denying all pending SRE requests under the RFS. Is that still the plan for the 60-plus pending SREs?
You know, we're still looking at that decision, and I believe that we need to be on course to grow biofuels in this country. And so when we look at some of these exemptions, it's our opinion and it's the court's opinion that these exemptions have not been done appropriately in the past, and we look forward to making the right calls as we move forward.
Excellent. That sounds like good news. Good news. In the last decision that denied the request from 36, they were given an alternative avenue for compliance. Do we expect the same, or are we going to actually get that demand for ethanol back into the system?
You know, I don't want to jump in front of any announcements, but what I want to say is the alternative path for compliance that was awarded to the first batch of SREs was done because, you know, these mistakes were made so far in the past. And the market has moved forward, and the conditions on the ground has shifted such that we made those special conditions or provisions for those. Moving forward, that is not a guarantee.
Outstanding. I love hearing that. Okay. EPA, the final renewable volume obligations for 2020, 21, and 22. Commitment has been made by EPA to get that done by June 3rd. Is that still the plan?
That is still the plan. We want to provide certainty. We want to rebuild the foundation of this program. 2022 was a cleanup year. As you know, 2020 was a cleanup year. 2022 will be one of the most aggressive RVO years that we've seen. And then from 2023 and beyond, we want to build on that. Biofuels will be a part of the solution for climate change and lowering the prices of that we're seeing at the pumps.
Man, rural America is going to love hearing that. Does it surprise you that Congress is not taking a more active role in defining the future of the RFS post-2022?
You know, it has. And this program, in my opinion, has not been well managed in the past. Some hard decisions have to be made. But with the partnership that I have with Secretary Tom Vilsack, coming from eastern rural North Carolina myself, I understand the needs of our communities. And so what we're going to do is we're going to follow the law. We're going to follow the science, and we're going to put this program on sound footing so that biofuels can play the role that Congress intended for it to play.
That is great news right there. I love hearing that. One last biofuel issue. EPA recently held a comment period regarding the food versus fuel issues relative to renewable diesel. What was the response? Did you get a lot of comments?
We did get a lot of comments, and you know, this agency has pledged to be transparent and listen to all comments. But, you know, I consult on a daily basis, if not weekly basis, with the Secretary of Agriculture. And so the decisions that we make, we will not be put in a position where our country has to face fuel versus food. We don't believe we're there. We don't believe we'll get there. And we believe that the science and the law provides for us to create a viable path for biofuels.
That is outstanding. Administrator Regan, you've been very generous with your time this morning. Thank you so much. Have safe travels down there. And these infrastructure problems, as I mentioned, long overdue. The updates are needed. Thank you for highlighting that.
Hey, well, thank you for having me. Enjoyed the conversation.
Excellent. Thank you so much. That is EPA Administrator Michael Regan. Thank you for joining us this morning. We really appreciate it. Come back this afternoon. We've got another great conversation for you on AgriTalk, talking with Kevin McNew from Farmers Business Network. Have a great day.